Are you Cheltenham ready? Download the Sporting Life app for the best coverage of the festival, including live race blogs, stable tours, interviews, video previews, and expert tipping.
Well, welcome along to the latest Sporting Life Racing podcast in a studio together for the first time. Well, we nearly have, Ed Chamberlain. We've lost Billy Nash, but you did grab him before kickoff.
Yes, the boy band was reunited briefly. It's nice to actually see you guys. Now I know you genuinely exist. It's lovely.
Yeah. And do you think weight gained? I mean, you haven't spoke about appearances or...
All three of you look extremely well. You've got the athlete on the right, the marathon runner.
All with faces for radio.
But as we've got Ed, David Johnson, GC, you will hear from Billy later on with his predictions for the festival. We're going to talk about what we want to see on each day of the Cheltenham Festival. But before that, it's the GC news round. And GC, I guess there's no price for guessing where we start.
As usual, Dave. I've got to get this right because we've got some very fancy new mics. So at least this will sound good in one way. Here are the game notes for this week. So, Dave, let's get the bloody whip out of the way. Lucky grilling Harrow on the way she's handled his steering committee's recommendations. Weird. Lots of erms. Little clarity. Felt a bit sorry for her. BHA, Jesus. They need a good festival. Badly. Paul Nichols, livid. Look out if he has a festival winner chalked off. Frankly, he could be in the mood for violence. Sam Whaley-Cohen says amateurs will cope with the new rules just fine. That's the same Sam who hit Noble Yates 12 times on the Aintree run-in, including 3 times when the National was in the bag. You really couldn't make it up. Sam Whaley-Cohen, SWC, suspect whip comments. Kelso, showing some how it's done. Also, giving winning trainers a sack of carrots. Kelso, throw in a few cucumbers and tomatoes, you'll get all the stars there. Racing Post, going earlier than Harry Skelton on La Milos with the yearly price hike. RP, raising prices. Ed Chamberlain, pit by Mark Chapman for the Sports Broadcaster of the Year. Never mind, Ed, at least it wasn't Matt Chapman. Lastly this week, Dave, DJ Cuddles and the Raw Remix. Wow, that was a bad segment. Thank the Lord the racing isn't far away. Dave, those are the week's game notes.
Best ever, I think. That might be the best ever. It needs a jingle. It needs a jingle to introduce it, I think, for the new series.
It's like a live show, isn't it, almost, as well? Yeah. The audience.
It's getting away from any semblance of news, isn't it? It's just... 2 minutes of me having digs at people and
one thing you have to do is you have to listen. The great thing is for the podcast, you have to listen to it 2 or 3 times just to get all the little bits and gems in there.
This was the week where, I wanted to take things seriously, but sport won't allow you to sometimes.
Yeah. It just.
By the way, I wasn't even close here. I didn't even get a medal, by the way. I wasn't even close. Wasn't pit by Mark.
Good speech going for sale, have you?
Yeah.
Unused.
I was going to thank the podcast.
4 years old, though, isn't it?
I was going to thank Dave, but it hasn't been used, has it?
One careful.
But Ed, you were at Kelso. Now, I don't know if you got a bag of carrots, but that I watched the ITV show. That felt a feel-good show. That it felt different.
I said to you, didn't I, last week, they do a great job there. They put money in, they put thought in, they're ambitious, they're forward-thinking. That bonus has totally revived the Moor battle, for sure. And to have Sandy Thompson on in the morning and then he do what he did in the afternoon, we dug out a picture of him missing a tackle against the All Blacks, which I don't think he liked particularly, but he was very engaging. And then he just had that dream afternoon and it's just full of nice people. It's a real good feeling at Kelso. The racecourse do a great job.
When you say he missed the tackle against the All Blacks... It makes it even worse that I made him a she on Channel 4 Racing. Now, that was a bad
Sandy.
Segment. That was a bad segment.
Jason Weaver did that with Ross Orion. You can imagine what he did. I didn't know that. That's brilliant.
Now, we are going to lose you, Ed, because you're a man in demand. You've got a big... Me and GC are on at Doncaster with you this evening, but you've got a couple
massive
of
that. Massive that. We're sold out, surely.
The signs have gone up, but you have got others to do before then. Before you go... I'm going to ask you what the theme of the podcast this week is. What do you want to see each other? We're going to come to that in 1 second, but what's your biggest fear going to Cheltenham this year?
What do you think?
I want to cheer you up right now. Come on. What's your biggest fear?
Having to even discuss a potential disqualification. I was anti-disqualification from the off, and this is why these big meetings, we don't even want to talk about it. How do I handle it to an audience who are just going to hear about it for the first time? I don't even want to talk about it, really, during the week if I can. But if there's a potential disqualification, it would be stupid of us not to. And in a situation where we might be having to count if there's 10, 11 strikes on terrestrial television, is just disastrous for the sport. So I just hope that does not happen.
Latest news, expulsion tool has remained unbrandished this week.
Long may that
review
carry
committee. Nine suspensions, eight of which are 4 days, one of which is 7 days. Now, I haven't got the full details, but they sound like relatively minor infringements. So the expulsion tool has remained in its holster for the moment.
We also haven't had the situation that it's been designed for, which is the win at all costs. It goes up 10 gears next week at the Cheltenham Festival. And I've likened it, and we've supported it, and we know whose responsibility it is now, and the jockeys have got to get it right. It's like in my old job, them changing the offside rule, FIFA doing it a couple of weeks before the World Cup. That's sort of how it feels right now.
Right, talk of expulsion tools, yours is about to be brandished. Michael Shinners will be smashing this door down any minute.
Don't worry about him. I love the pod. Here we go.
To hook you out, what do you want to see Tuesday at Cheltenham?
Well, I think Tuesday, Audie, I mean, we've had so much misery this season. It's not been a great season. It's been stop-start. It's had its moments. The headlines have been all wrong for the sport, but it could lift off on Tuesday. I think Tuesday's a fabulous day of sport. I can't wait to promote it with a scala, whip you into a frenzy on ITV to get it started, and then just proper racing galore. I love the Supreme is fascinating with Fassel Vega. Then we go to El Fabiolo against John Bond. Then we go to a wide open, brilliant betting race with the big field in the Ultima. Then we go to Constitution Hill, hopefully doing something spectacular in the Champion Hurdle. And then we say farewell to Honeysuckle, who'll get a rousing reception, win, lose or draw, in a really good mares. It is a fabulous day on Tuesday, Audie. If I had one wish, it would be Constitution Hill to do something absolutely spectacular and be on the front and back pages on Wednesday morning.
Just to be clear, we will be coming over these topics with Dave and GC very shortly. Wednesday, Champion Chase Day. What does Ed Chamberlain want to say on day two?
It's David against Goliath is the way I'm sort of building up to it. Edward Stone and his owners, who've bred some very slow horses, who've suddenly got this wonderful horse, and they're terrific, those two guys, up against Tony Bloom, the Brighton owner, Willie Mullins and Energamine. And I really fancy Edward Stone. I think he's going to do it. And it's a fascinating tactical race, that. Really looking forward to getting stuck into that with Ruby Walsh. What will Editor DeGeet do this time? How will they ride Energamine? How different Tom Cannon's got to be on Edward Stone? I love a rematch like this. Really, really looking forward to the Champion Chase. And I hope Impair et Pass wins the Ballymore, because the vibe for that horse is so strong. And Daryl Jacobs, fascinating on him. He's obviously very, very good.
Thursday, I think that's the day you struggle with most of your fatigue. It feels like day three, Thursday. You've got Gold Cup fever on the Friday. What's going to lift you out of the doldrums?
Don't forget, you know, Thursday's been kind to us over the years with flooring porters and the winning celebrations, the golden hour with Frodon and Paisley Park. Paisley Park would be the ultimate wish in terms of a reception. Can you imagine if he was to win the Stayers again? Shishkin wouldn't be far behind. He's a public horse, Shishkin. So him winning the Ryanair would do no harm at all. And then Patrick Mullins to win the Kim Muir later in the day, and then become only the third jockey to win every amateur race at the Cheltenham Festival, which would be a great achievement for him.
Tremendous achievement. And last but not least, Boodle's Cheltenham Gold Cup Day on the Friday. What does Ed Chamberlain want to see?
It's a fabulous Gold Cup. It's got everything for punters and for journalists and for terrestrial television, Audie. It's got the lot, this Gold Cup. People are going to open their newspapers on Saturday morning and see a big field. The bookmakers, Sky Bet. I can't imagine how many places they'll be available. It's really going to capture the imagination. Stories-wise, it's got the lot. It's got Galopante Jean, who's a potential superstar. It's got former winners. Apolutaro blew the race apart last year. It's got Hewick as a fairy tale. It's got a strong home defence with Brave Man's Game, Ahoy Senor and Protectorat. It's got two each-way bits in it for me, Noble Yates and Statler. It's got the lot, the Boodles Cheltenham Gold Cup. Half of me wants Galopante Jean to go out and prove he's a superstar. Half of me wants Ronnie Bartlett to win the Gold Cup, but it's set up beautifully, and I think everyone will get stuck in and it'll capture the imagination this year, the Gold Cup. It's the best one we've had in our tenure anyway.
Final question before you depart. How excited are you on the eve of the
I think
fest?
You can tell, Audie. One thing that winds me up in the build-up to it within racing is people want to knock Cheltenham. I never understand why. It baffles me. People saying the Dublin Racing Festival's better and Cheltenham needs to learn from it. No, it doesn't. They're both great in their own right. I love the Dublin Racing Festival. Cheltenham is something completely different. The public love Cheltenham. Just look at the numbers that watch it. Just look at the numbers that go to Cheltenham. Sports fans engage with racing for 4 days. When I presented the football, there was only 4 days of the year that the television was on racing. And that's not Royal Ascot. That's not York, I'm afraid. That's not Goodwood. It's Cheltenham. Cheltenham is huge for the public. I don't know why racing people knock it. This is the day to show off the best meeting we have. It is fabulous. And this year, the sport has got big problems. But as always, the festivals in this country are good. And I just hope it's going to be spectacular. And I just hope people within racing realise that, embrace it, and we make the most of it.
Here, we all wish you all the best for a massive week for ITV. And if you can vacate the show.
Well, looking forward to seeing you all there. It's going to be,
you will.
Be great.
We've got Mark Chapman waiting outside to come in. We need an award winner. This needs elevator. But Chapman, is it Mark is free?
To emphasise again, Mark.
I said Mark.
Some people have confused it this week. It was Mark Chapman.
It's always next year, Ed.
Cheers, guys. I've really enjoyed the build-up on this pod. It's been great fun, and it's lovely to see you.
Brilliant. Thanks, Ed. And before Ed leaves, we're going to play the interview we did with Billy, where Billy makes his five predictions for what's going to happen next week.
You're listening to The Sporting Life, Cheltenham Festival Fever podcast.
So, Billy, you've dusted off your crystal ball. What I want are your five wishes, I think, for the Cheltenham Festival when it comes to Ireland. Where do you want to start?
OK, let's start with an easy one, Ed. We'll start with the leading owner of the week. I think it's fairly, you know, it looks like it's pretty much going to be JP McManus this year. He's got a really big team, as he always does, but he's got a very strong team. He'll have a number of favourites. He'll have loads of opportunities in all the handicaps, and I'd be very surprised, just from the strength of numbers, if not anything else, if he's not leading owner at the end of the week.
You can see his hunger as well, because he's also added late additions to his armoury, hasn't he?
Yeah, nothing new there with JP. You know, he's snapped up the likes of So Scottish, a couple more as well. So, yeah, he's, like I said, he's got a huge team this year, and he looks to have loads of chances. So I think it's fairly obvious. He's odds-on favourites with all the bookies. I'd be very surprised if he's not the leading owner.
Yeah, and I love the way he leaves the horse with the trainer, and also, in the case of the bumper horse, leaves John Gleeson on. The man is class. Right, that's number one. What's number two?
Number two is, I think Charles Burns, he's overdue a Cheltenham Festival winner, and I think he's going to have one this year. He goes there with a couple of really live chances. Run for Oscar will have a great chance in the Coral Cup. Blazing Cal, touch wood, if he comes out of his last piece of work this week all right. He had a little setback after his reappearance, but if he comes out of that okay, he'll have a great chance in the Stairs Hurdle. But I think his best chance of the whole week will come in the Pertemps final. He's got a horse called Shoot First, will be ridden by his son Philip. He won a qualifier at Cheltenham way back in November, I think it was. He's been put away for this. He's an unexposed horse. He'll probably be sent off favourite. But
I was going to say, what price do you think he'll be? Sort of 7-2 and 4s at the minute.
Yeah, it looks like something like that, yeah. And well, if Charles gets stuck into him, he'll be a lot shorter than that. But yeah, I think he'll be very hard to beat, Ed.
Right, that's Charles Burns. What about your next one, number three?
Number three is, I think the Irish novice hurdlers are really strong this year, Ed, and I think we'll clean sweep the novice hurdle events.
Oh, for goodness sake. That
includes the Boodles, I think I'll put that in there as well, and the Mayor's novice hurdle. I think we'll win all the novice hurdles. I think the Irish novice hurdlers are just a bit better than the British ones this year, and I think we'll just hoover up those races, I reckon.
You don't think Hermes Allen in the Ballymore or Tamuris in the Skybet Supreme?
I wouldn't be too worried about Tamuris. I didn't like him at all at Sandown the last day. I'm not saying he's not talented. I just think I'm not sure he's professional enough yet. I think he's a bit of growing up to do that horse. And I think the Supreme might just come a little bit soon in his development. Hermes Allen, I definitely would respect in the Ballymore. He's the best British novice hurdle that I've seen this year. But I do think the Irish challenge in that is strong. Lucia will probably be sent off favourite in the Mayor's novice, but I think the Irish...
You're keen to take her on, aren't you?
I'm very keen to take her on, yeah. I didn't like the way she jumped at Exeter. I think she has loads of speed and she's a very classy mare, but I think the Irish mares are really talented and I think we're coming with a strong group in that.
And then one of your bets of the week's in the Albert Bartlett as well, isn't it?
One of my bets of the week is the Albert Bartlett, yeah. The horse of Joseph O'Brien's Dawn Rising. Galileo, another one in the JP McManus silks. It was actually my only anti-post bet of the year this year, Ed. I've backed Dawn Rising way back earlier in the year. I just think he's crying for a step up and trip. He's been running really well at 2.5 miles. I think the step up to 3 will really suit him. And look, he's a classy horse from the flat. I mean, he was second in a Group 3 as a 3-year-old. You know, things didn't quite go his way after that. He had a few injury setbacks, but he's taken really well to hurdling, and I just think the step up and trip, he's tailor-made for it.
Is that a wish, or do we move to 4?
Oh, that's a wish.
That's a wish. So that was number 4.
Yeah.
One more. You can have one more wish, Billy. Only one more. This is your final wish for the Cheltenham Festival 2023.
My wish is that this won't happen, but I have an awful feeling that it will, Ed, and that's the ugly issue of the whip rearing its head. You know, I wish that something won't be disqualified, but I think there's a real chance it might be. You know, we could go 3 or 4 days without it happening, but then you've the Hunter's Chase and the Martin Pipe on the final day. There's a real possibility that somebody is going to just get a rush of blood. Something will get hit once or twice too many and it'll be thrown out the following week. I wish it won't happen, but I've an awful feeling that it will.
That's my big fear, if I'm honest. I mean, it's only a 5-2 chance for there to be a disqualification with the bookmakers. My challenge there, Billy, is how to cover it on terrestrial television. This hasn't come into the public consciousness yet. And you get an instance, particularly in a big race, where you're thinking, oh, my goodness, is it 9, 10, 11? Do we analyse that? Do we slow it down to have a look with a chance of there being a disqualification? How do I word a presentation to connections knowing full well they're going to lose it the following week? It's, you can see the nightmare I've got on terrestrial television here. It feels like they've changed the offside rule 2 weeks before a World Cup.
It does, but that's where you get paid the big bucks, Ed.
I wish. God, I hope your wish comes true and it doesn't happen. Billy, enjoy the
festival. Hopefully not. I certainly will. You too.
You're listening to The Sporting Life, Cheltenham Festival Fever podcast.
Thanks to Billy and Ed, and five becomes three, but we're still three-man standing as we head towards the second section of the podcast. David, I'm going to start with you. Opening day of the Cheltenham Festival, what do you want to see happen at Prestbury Park?
I think Ed covered it off pretty well with regards to Champion Hurdle and Constitution Hill, and we really, you know, at Timeform, we're into the ratings of the horses, and a lot's been said after the Supreme Novices. Straight away, we got quite a lot of criticism for taking such a high view of Constitution Hill at the time. It's like, how can you go so high when he's only had three or four runs? And, you know, we've seen this season, he is that kind of level that could mean that we're elevating him not just amongst the all-time greats, but even potentially as the greatest hurdler of all time. So I think that is obviously the one thing. But this Supreme Novices, I mean, we all know about the Cheltenham Roar, and with the story at the DRF with Facil Vega getting beat there, you know, we've got such a really intriguing race. So when the tapes go up for that, there's just so much to unload in that race that is going to unveil so much, I think.
That Cheltenham Roar, not even without the dance track behind it, we're fantastic for that. Jesse, I want to touch upon Constitution Hill before we get you up. We were around for the golden age of the hurdlers. We saw Vista Brack, See You Then, the multiple winners. I don't know about you, but there's something with Constitution Hill that feels different.
Absolutely. And salute to DJ Cuddles and the Raw remix. Whatever you got paid for that, well done, sir. What I'm looking forward to most, it's all tied in with Constitution Hill, but on a more general point, gents, it is that feeling of optimism that pervades all around Cheltenham in the few hours leading up to race one. If you could bottle that optimism and positivity, you would have the answer to a lot of the world's problems. And after a winter when, you know, we've all been griping, myself included, about the whip issue, bloody whip issue, about prices, about small fields, race dilution, all goes out the window at about 11 o'clock when the gates open at Cheltenham. And everyone, there's a feeling that you think anything's possible. Anything's possible this week. That involves going skint, but it involves also seeing some fantastic sport, maybe winning a few quid, seeing a lot of people you haven't seen perhaps for a good while, and just having a bloody good time. So bring it on. There's been a lot of negativity, and everyone gets why there's been that negativity. But on Tuesday afternoon, the spotlight rightly goes on the players, and that's where it should stay all week.
Absolutely. David, just talking Constitution Hill, that massive number of the Supreme, the race was teed up perfectly for a big number with Dicet Dynamo and John Bond making the running. The Champion Hurdle's a very different scenario. I mean, it looks straightforward. It'll just jump out and make the running, won't it?
I think if you're looking for him to be able to run to one of those huge figures, he's going to have to do a lot of the donkey work himself. And, you know, State Man has obviously been going from the front himself recently, but the reason that he's been doing that is because he's been pinching the advantage by doing that. He's not going to go in there to set the race up for Constitution Hill, I don't think. So, yeah, you're going to see Constitution Hill ridden like he was similar, I think, at Newcastle and Kempton, and he's just going to pour it on down the hill, hopefully, and it's just how far back is he going to be able to, or how far is he going to be able to pull clear of them in that straight?
You see, I think we're all in agreement that the Sports Life article, probably the finest sponsorship in the great game. Now, we've got the Noddy's Ride, Bob's Line, we've got the Anglo-Irish Duel this time. Is that a race that you save, where you can just sit back and watch these two go at it?
No, it's a race, I can do that, but I want to try to read the race a bit differently than the market. I think the Irish Arkle was such a deep race, potentially deeper than this. And El Fabiolo was a very, very emphatic winner, but he did make a couple of mistakes along the way, and he's 11-8, and I don't want that worry about jumping at that price. John Bon is a horse I think the world of. I do think there's a little tendency creeping in for him to jump to the right. It was definitely evident at Warwick. On a schooling video, I'm really nitpicking here, Dave, but he was just inclining at half pace, slightly to the right. And I think Dysart Dynamo has a really good chance of giving it a big shake. Stacks up to be a small field this, but it's still three places each way. And I think Dysart Dynamo is a great... I don't think there's a better natural jumper in all the novice races than that horse. I think he's gradually learning to channel that fiery energy. He and John Bon went bombs away, and they set Constitution Hill up for that epic time and form performance in last year's Supreme. He was somewhat more relaxed last time in that Irish Arkle. If you look at the clock, El Fabiolo stopped the clock 4:08 on easy ground, 2 miles, 1 furlong in the Irish Arkle. This is a shorter trip, faster track, I think, and the winner will stop the clock at around 3:50 just either side. So I think Dysart Dynamo's really accurate jumping and the lesser emphasis on stamina, hopefully with Danny Mullins' magic hands getting him in nice and relaxed, I think that horse can make this year's Sporting Life Arkle far more than a two-way go. I think it's a three stars in there, not two.
David, one or two people putting Danny Mullins up, top, potential top jockey market, if you think he's going to be picking up most of the second strings at Close Sutton, which would be first strings in most of the yards.
Yeah, exactly that. And he's obviously going to ride the defending champion in the Stayers Hurdle as well, isn't he? So he does have a deep book of rides. But I think this Arkle, or the Sporting Life Arkle, well as played, I should give well it its played. Full title.
Thank you.
You know, it sets up in such a fascinating way because, as Graham's there saying about Dysart Dynamo, he's got to be ridden that way because that's the only way that he can be. But you ask Mullins with El Fabiolo and Henderson with John Bon, they'd be delighted to have him in there, I think, because they'll want a real good gallop to see their horses to best effect as well. So it just sets up really well. And I think I'm still with El Fabiolo. I think in terms of ability, I still think he's better or potentially better than John Bon. And hopefully this will be the day that he proves it.
He might be a genuine, real, real star, that horse. Interestingly, I think it's interesting. I spoke to Aidan Coleman soon after John Bon won at Warwick and mentioned Dysart Dynamo. And I won't say he was dismissive, but he gave a sort of harumph. So said that horse was knackered, shall we say, when he came down in the Supreme Novices. Well, not really surprising that he was tired because he went a lethal, lethal gallop. And I think with more restraint that he's interested. But no, the first couple of races, as always at Cheltenham, will set the tone for what should be a spectacular day.
We've got a really interesting mare's hurdle as well, GC. The big question, Honeysuckle, final farewell.
Yeah.
Can she bow out in triumph? Is there enough ability still there to win this?
This is a smashing race. I know that, in theory, Honeysuckle and Epitone should be in the champion hurdle, but I get why they aren't there. And it gives us a genuine extra grade one puzzle to solve here. And I'm of the opinion that Epitone has probably held her form. David can flesh this out in terms of time form ratings. I hope she's holding a form perhaps a little bit better than Honeysuckle. I don't think there'll be much between the two, and Honeysuckle will run a belter. But Epitaunt, the forgotten horse of day one, because Nicky Henderson forgot to enter her for the Mare's Hurdle. I think he also forgot to enter Theatre Glory, who deserves an honourable mention. But it's a smashing race. It's a good betting race, which will polarise people. I think Epitaunt might just have the edge, because I think Honeysuckle is... shame on me for saying it. Some people will torch me for this. I don't think she was ever that good. She was just beating relatively mediocre champion hurdle opponents. She's a terrific mare, wonderfully consistent, but I think Epitaunt might just have the edge given the way their profiles are these days. What do the ratings say, David?
Yeah, well, Epitaunt, at her very best, she had a time form rating in the low 160s, and even last year she was sort of more in the mid-150s, and this year's effort suggests she's still at that kind of level, whereas I think with Honeysuckle, we'd had her rated in the mid-160s, and she hasn't got close to that this year. She's sort of more in the low 150s in terms of bear form. So it could well be that she is deteriorating a fair bit quicker than what Epitaunt is. And as great a story as it would be, you know, we've still got to put our cold punting hats on, haven't we, where Cheltenham's concerned, and I'd be happy to draw a line through her.
It's an unusual race, a mare's only race, when you can have two former winners of the Champion Hurdle, three between them, Honeysuckle and Epitone, and you've still got to throw in Brandy Love, perhaps Mary's Rock, but maybe she'll go for the stayers, more on her. Echoes in Rain, Love Envoy, Queen's Brook, she wears it well. It's not about the two proven grade one horses, that race. It's a really enticing race.
They put it together in Mayor's Pargon, didn't they, a few years ago, tried to beef it out.
To find a race like this.
It was. And even without the two-star names, it would have been a fascinating renewal. They're icing on the cake, although they should both be in the champion. Day two, GC, Wednesday. Champion Chase, the feature race. What do you want to see on day two of the Champion?
Well, I want to see an Ergamine win for the second year running. And it's a bit like the Facile Vega angle. What price would he have been without his latest defeat? And the answer to that is probably shade of odds on. And you might get 2-1 for looking before too long. And I'm more inclined to forgive him his Clarence House Chase defeat than some, and it's not because of what colour the fences were, although the fact that Willie Mullins mentioned that intrigues me. It's just that the pace and tactical setup for the Clarence House suited the winner, Editor Ajit, who keeps being underestimated in markets and may well be again, but I don't think he's going to get the sort of saloon, softish passage on the front end next week as he did in January. I am scared of Edward Stone. Why wouldn't you be? Super consistent, dominant Arkle winner, emphatic, commanding Tingle Creek winner, and probably was given a lot to do in that Clarence House. But I think a peak form in Ergamine, and by peak form, I mean one of his two defeats, i.e. second to Shishkin, more of him later. I still think an Ergamine sets the bar, and he sets it pretty high. But David, the tactical nature of this year's Champion Chase with Editor Ajit, Gentleman to me going forward, perhaps an Ergamine. It's going to be a very different tactical shape, I think, than the Clarence House, don't you?
It is, yeah. And it's a race I'm going round in circles because, like you mentioned there, an Ergamine, I don't think it's a question that he's got the very best form in the race. And, you know, nobody of these would have got as close to Shishkin as what he did in the Clarence House. And I know that his Queen Mother win last year did fall apart a little bit, but he was still very authoritative in a pretty good time that day. So, you know, it's not like he's only got one piece of form that suggests he's that kind of level. Whereas Edward Stone, I'm still not convinced he's at that kind of level yet. I still worry a little bit that the Tingle Creek fell apart a little bit. And I know he wasn't ridden as well as what Editor Ajit was in the Clarence House, but he did get upsides and he still couldn't quite seal the deal. So, but Gentleman to me, he's the one that's sort of interesting in there. Obviously, the same trainer as what an Ergamine is. Is he going to be in there? Not just as a spoiler, because his best form does come from the front as well. So that's a natural way to ride him. So it does set up for there's just so many races there this week that we spent so much time earlier in the winter thinking, oh, it's a really boring race. It's just going to turn up and by these horses running and not necessarily running up to expectations in the trials, it's made some of these races so, so interesting. And you can sit back and watch them and just enjoy how they unfold.
I found it interesting. People talk about Willie Mullins hitting the 100 festival winners mark, 12 winners potentially. He hasn't got an odds-on shot anywhere across the board.
No, if I was to go the under-over, I think I'd put it 8.5, 9 rather than double figures. And he could go that, but you're right. He's not got the shoe-ins that you'd like to see if you're thinking that he's going to raise his bat for 100 festival winners. He needs 12 in order to do that.
David, what is it you want to see on day two?
Just what I guess talking about that Champion Chase, it's fair, even race where nobody comes out of it with an excuse, I guess. That'd be the real thing for me. It's just the Champion Chase sticks out a mile from that day's racing, I think.
Grand Annual on day two. I think it is these days, isn't it?
Sure, I've lost track of the Grand Annual. I think it is day two.
I think it is. I've just got a soft spot for that horse, Saint Seagal. I'm not sure whether he's
going to run. Money around for him yesterday, I saw. He's blue on odds checker.
Yeah, I know that Chester Williams, who does a lot of the race planning for the Jane Williams operation these days, he's got a clear eye on Aintree, but it's not impossible that they'll be tempted because that Grand Annual is a race that stacks up really well for those smooth travelling hold-up horses, and he's one of those.
David, we've got the Brown advisory. We've got Jerry Colon was one of two Elliott hotpots in the novice chases. Is Mighty Potter to come in the turners? Is Jerry Colon, are you a convert? Do you think he's banking material as one or two are putting up?
I'm not convinced he's banker material yet. In terms of, obviously, they've also got Mighty Potter in the turners. I'd be stronger on him than what I would be Jerry Colon. I mean, part of the issue is we're still not sure what he's going to be ending up running against in the Brown advisory, are we? We're still waiting on Willie Mullins to declare whether Sir Gerhard is going to run here.
I think he probably will.
I think he's in that way.
He's a classic modern festival horse in that there's a conundrum. We know how good he is from last year's festival, but his chasing experience consists of one run in a tiny field at Goran, an effective match where he was nearly down very early on. So you're going way back and to hurdles form if you want to back him more than any chase form, aren't you?
But what I think about 12 months ago, he was their best novice hurdler. They were choosing where they were going to slot him in, and he was the one that was going to win, and they were just choosing the right race. He was a point and shoot one for them last year.
I like Jerry Colon. I didn't really know a massive amount about him until I started delving, and he just looks like that sort of warhorse type of character who just keeps finding plenty. Really good news for Jordan Gainford that he's going to keep the ride on that horse, and this looks fiery. Won't be a big field, but the real whacker. He goes out, bombs away, jumping boldly, setting a good gallop. And I think that that Jerry doesn't need a pacemaker, but the real whacker could be the sort of horse who helps bring about his best.
That real whacker is fencing, is jumping is such an asset, isn't it, GC? He's such a natural.
And that would be your romance angle for Patrick Neville and the colourful owners of this horse, for a guy who was plodding along in Ireland, an average of a couple of winners a year, Patrick Neville, and he said, well, this isn't working out. Let's give it one go, is what he said. One last go, really, in Yorkshire. And he's got a flagship horse there in the real whacker.
David, just finally on Wednesday, we've been struggling for like British novice hurdlers, trying to shove them through. We Hermes Alan in the Ballymore, but from what everybody said, I don't think he's going to start favourite now. The Mullins horse in the double green is the one that all the dogs are barking. Is it Eel?
On Pere Pass.
I always get in Pere Pass. Like to start favourite teams now. Do you think there's a chance Paul Nicholls can keep the Ballymore at home with Hermes Alan?
I think it's pretty difficult to see him beating the best of the Irish novice hurdlers, personally. Hermes Alan, I don't know whether this race is necessarily going to play to his strengths. There's plenty of these shallow hurdle winners of come on to this race and they've just not had the pace, have they, to deal with the best of the Irish horses. A race that tends to be more of a test of speed, I think, this, than obviously what the Challow is. And I'm not sure that Hermes Alan will be able to get the job done against a speed horse like Impero Pass.
From a news point of view, though, it's going to be really fun to watch Paul Nicholls, isn't it? This is his, in terms of odds, it's by far his shortest price runner of the week, I think, Hermes Alan.
It would be, wouldn't he?
He's not had a festival winner for at least 3 years. So it'd be great to see him have a winner. I'd like to see that, actually, because, you know, his sustained excellence and consistency and boldness deserves reward. I'm a bit more positive about that horse. I've been very impressed by his jumping, and his shallow form has worked out a treat, admittedly on very different ground than he's likely to get. So I can't wait to see him. I would put up a good word for Gaelic Warrior, who I think is a very, very much stronger than a second string for Mullins. Other anglers on the Wednesday, Davy Russell back from retirement with, I suspect, his shortest priced horse of the week. He will ride Delta Work, I guess, now that Jack Kennedy is absent. But we should mention Galvin in that cross country. He's a very odd horse to be in the cross country. He's only 8. He's rated 165. He beat A Plutard in the Savills Chase just 15 months ago. And I think he was second favourite for the Gold Cup and ran pretty well for fourth. So for Gordon Elliott to be going in, well, multiple-handed in that cross-country chase, Russell back from retirement is the potential news story. But Galvin is a rare one for a cross-country horse, isn't he?
I'm sure I read something on a stable tour or a preview now that they'd done something with Gaelic Warrior. The jumping the rat, they'd found something, they'd tweaked physically. I don't know. It wasn't in our 59 horse stable tour.
I wouldn't be too worried about that. I thought that tendency to jump right only really manifested itself very late in the piece. And he won a pretty good handicap from a mark of 143 at Leopardstown, and he won it really handsomely. So I think in that match bet between the main two Mullins horses in the market on Pere Pass and Gaelic Warrior, Don't sleep on him. I think Gaelic Warrior has the runs on the board now.
Patrick spoke at our internal preview yesterday and said that he's going to ride Gaelic Warrior, didn't he? And
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he's going to ride Gaelic Warrior, and he was saying that the plan is going to be hunting round on the inside, and just it brought back memories of Ruby on York Hill. Do you remember how he sort of hugged the inside throughout, whereas was it Geraghty on Yanworth that sort of couldn't have gone any wider? So I think it's going to be drop him in, bury him on the inside, and hopefully that'll stop him jumping out to the right.
A good book of rides, Patrick, hasn't he, as well? That's building up nicely.
Yeah. Looking forward to Coral Cup. He's well found in the market, but that HMS Seahorse, I like horses who show big improvement on the flat, then go back to hurdles. That's what he's done. He looks a progressive horse. By Galileo, he's had a few festival winners, Galileo, including Brazil, I think, last year. But I think another one was a Coral Cup winner in Super Sunday. It's just a bit of useless information. But that HMS Seahorse looks a likely lad for the Coral Cup.
A few years since he won at the meeting himself, of course.
Of course, yes. Brackets, Paul. Those brackets. Was it Poland?
I think it was Poland.
Triple Crown winner, wasn't he?
Yeah. One of the all-time greats in Poland. Thursday, David, we've got the... Ryan and I, we've got the stage hurdle. What do you want to see on Thursday?
It's a nightmare, that status hurdle. It's more and more open the more you look at it.
Yeah, financial point of view, it'd be Blazing Carl, to be honest. But confidence ebbing away with...
another Charles Burns bulletin.
Charles, yes. So, we'll have to see. But I like the fact that obviously so many in there, you know what you're dealing with, whereas Blazing Carl, he's done so little wrong. He looks like he's still improving. Certainly, did all that you could expect of him in that reappearance the last time. So I'd be really hopeful that if he's fit and well, that he could sort of be that new interesting stayer on the scene that we've been crying out for a long while.
And you see, the stayers is a fascinating race because the cast just seem to grow by the week, and we loot off people by the week, and it's just, you don't know where you are with it.
I've got a long list of horses here and sort of blobs, i.e. chance, against four of them. That's Tiapu for obvious reasons. He looks an improving horse. Mary's Rock, David can flesh out the case for her in a minute. He's been dying for her to run in this race for ages, and she'll get that £7, which would be handy if she does run. Classical Dream, I still have no idea whether he's going to rock up. And that Gold Tweet, it could have been a falsely run race to Cleve Hurdle, but he won it like a proper Group 1 horse. So that is a key open race on day three. But the star attraction, no question, on day three is Shishkin, who I think, perhaps not on time form figures, David, but on BHA figures, I think he has more in hand on the BHA numbers than Constitution Hill does in the Champion Hurdle. He's at least £8 or more clear of the rest of his rivals. And remember, there's no Alaho in this year's Ryanair. That was clearly the major stumbling block. And there's no Conflated, who would have been definitely in the first three in the market. So he's odds on, and rightly so, Shishkin, to beat a field who includes the likes of last year's runner-up, Janadil, who should go well. But I think a lot of betting around that race is going to be either without the favourite or the forecast betting, because Shishkin at Ascot, on the numbers even, he would be right back up to his Imperius best, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I think it was. He's time form rated 179, which is pretty much as good as what he's ever been. I think we might have been slightly higher than that initially after the Clarence House, but pulled that down a little bit since. But you just couldn't help but be impressed with him, could you? Obviously at Ascot, and a lot of people were saying that maybe it's the trip, but I'm not convinced that was the sole reason at all. He just looked a happier, healthier horse. You know, he'd had a breathing up. They'd put a tongue strap on him. So whether, you know, they've just sort of found the key to him that way. But, he certainly didn't look short of pace, did he, as he quickened away after the last.
Willie Mullins has a clutch of horses. Fasal Vega is one. Energamine is another. A clutch of horses who would have been considerably shorter had they not had the springboard race. Fasal Vega, Energamine, and add Blue Lord to that list. And I'm not quite sure what to make of him over 2.5 miles, full stop. But I'm also not sure what to make of him, because I really thought he would beat Gentleman to Me over 2 miles at the DRF, and he didn't. So it looks like it revolves around Shishkin. And one or two people have suggested he might bounce, but I don't think that's backed up by the factual data. And if he's healthy, David, he wins, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, ratings-wise, he's going to have the best part of a stone in hand. And, you know, I think there was some odds against knocking about, wasn't there, straight after Ascot. He's well into sort of 8 to 11 now, and I don't think anybody can argue that he doesn't fully deserve to be that kind of price.
We'll put you on the spot again. Is it Kim Muir on day three? I think it is, isn't it?
I'm saying yes.
Normally my type of race, and he's well found in the market, but that I'm interested to see what Timeform say about a horse called Stumptown, David, because he's won his last two pulling a bus for Gavin Cromwell. Sandown last time, I don't know whether they came over to have a look at the market, etc., but he watched the video of him at Sandown. He jumped like an absolute buck. So he looks a really strong, solid favourite in the Kim Muir chase.
Yeah, he's a Timeform horse in focus, I think, by the looks of it. Still got the P, you know, it's the kind of race that often it's full of, it's almost like it's a veterans chase, isn't it? It's usually contested by the exposed sorts that have been there and seen it, whereas he's obviously very, very different. And, you know, just reading through the comments saying about him cruising clear last time, it's clear that he's going there firmly on the up, and, you know, with a trainer that has more than his share of festival winners these days.
Breaking news, the second from the Sandown race. I just noticed one at Wetherby on Monday, and he beat him doing handsprings.
It's funny, isn't it? Martin Greenwood made the point that the Irish handicappers tend to be the novices, and Willie's throwing novices in the handicap chases for the first time.
Never won a handicap chase
ever.
At the festival.
And he said, we've got to try something different. Like Kilcrutt suddenly in the Ultima. There's one or two others that are likely. But it's that match as well, isn't it? Because, David, you know, as a handicapper, they're trying to give the older horses a chance of dropping them quicker than they've done in the past. It's where we meet the progression and the regression. It's a fascinating conundrum.
It is, yeah, and it's something that they've managed to do more successfully with the chasers, isn't it? It's sort of been well picked up on in a lot of the preview evenings, I think, you know, is how superior the British chasers can tend to be in the handicap chasers. The hurdles, it's still tends to be dominated by the unexposed Irish horses, and to be honest, I don't see that changing anytime soon, because it just the way that the two jurisdictions come up with the marks, they just remain very, very different. And it does suit the Irish horses that are on the way up against the more exposed British ones.
It's a conversation for another day, but it is high time that these two jurisdictions got together and standardised their ratings, isn't it? It just seems...
Can't be beyond the...
No. It has to be a politics
thing. It's like so many things, you know, who's going to give ground, who's going to concede, because anybody that does, they'll sort of be publicly admitting, well, we've been doing it wrong, you know, and if that's the case, you just can't sort of see who's going to bow. That's racing, isn't it, unfortunately?
We get a French, they'll give a rating from French form, won't they? You get horses in the boodles that have never run in England or Ireland, and there's so many different handicappers at work. They all come up with this final central figure for Martin Greenwood and the team do for Cheltenham.
Well, if Rishi Sunak can go across to Ireland and, you know, tell them that they've got a great solution to the Brexit deal, which I'm not sure they have, surely, you know, a few handicappers, 12 at the BHA, apparently, that's staggering, but that's another conversation. It's time for this issue to at least be addressed, because it has such a look of sort of randomness and quite awkward feel to it. If you follow racing closely, you think, well, we're still making up numbers for horses that just because they've got on a ferry.
But you see, trainers don't even blink now. Irish trainers aren't blinking when they put up 10. They're still running them. They're still 7-1 favourite. They've gone up 10 per hand.
Until they start winning all those races.
Well, that's it. You know, everyone sort of says the same every year. They really tried to have a go at the Irish this time, but it's not that at all, because if it was, they wouldn't be winning all these races with these unexposed horses, would they? I mean, look at Stateman, you know. What did that win off? 141 or something ridiculous.
When we were there, the William Mullins stable to it last year, he didn't know it had been entered. I think David Kershaw, Ruby, whoever does the handicap entries, to put him in there. He was Skybet Supreme for Willie. That was the way he was going.
Maybe Hunter's Yarns, that horse, this year on day four in the county hurdle.
Day four, beautifully teed up, GC.
Thank you.
The final day of the festival. The boodles are up for grabs in the boodle Cheltenham Gold Cup. What is it you want to see on day four?
Well, it's absolutely stating the obvious, but, you know, I've been very excited about Galopin de Champs for a long, long time. He's always had that sort of... aura about him within the yard, I think. I think they've always thought that he is one of their real aces, and his record absolutely backs that up. He's fast, he's high class, he jumps well overall, bar that last fence departure in the Turners last year. And one of the few questions remaining is whether he will stay a stiff 3¼ miles. I think and hope that he will. And I think and hope that he's one of the most exciting Gold Cup newcomers since Courtauld Starr. That's a big rap, but I think he has that sort of quality about him. And he's not a massive value proposition. And lots of people will be looking to use him as a tool for each way value. And I get it completely. But in terms of star quality, there aren't many to beat him next week.
He's making his Gold Cup debut, David, in a fascinating Gold Cup. There's lots of different strands to this race.
Absolutely, yeah, you know, and obviously Aploutard, the defending champion, if he's fit and well, is going to be a real tough nut to crack. But, you know, it's not like he's the only one in there, is it? And I'm just really looking forward to seeing Brave Man's Game, to be honest, as well, because he's a horse that has really won me over this season in terms of, you know, he obviously disappointed in the spring in the Mildmay, having... He was supposed to run, wasn't he, at Cheltenham and was pulled out because of the ground, but he was really good at Wetherby. And I was just sort of so taken with what he did in the King George. Obviously, he wouldn't have won by as far if Lompress had stood up. But if you hadn't have watched those horses beforehand, you wouldn't have thought that Brave Man's Game was the one that some people were questioning whether he had the resolution or the stamina for a race like that, because he was off the bridle before Lompressé. He'd been taken round the houses, hadn't he, by Harry Cobden, that, you know, if he'd have got beat, he'd have taken plenty of stick for that ride, but it was sort of brushed under the carpet a little bit because he did come out on top. But he just looks like a horse that really is coming to himself. And if you're going to win a Gold Cup, you tend to have your best chance to do it at your first attempt. Obviously, Aploutard defied that the previous year, but it'd just be great as well to see a King George winner go on to the Gold Cup, I think, again.
I think there's a better, nimbler, more agile jumper in the race than Brave Man's Game, and that's going to... I think it's going to take him deep into the race. Whether he'll really come up the hill as well as Connections Hope, I'm not sure, but... I could see him 3-4 out looking a serious player.
Just a line on Aploutard, is he? Desperate trying to get the wheels on him. He missed that race at Leopardstown. He was due to run with it on the day. Setback. This would be some training performance, wouldn't it?
Talk about a contrast. You have that image of him scything 15 lengths clear. I think it was 15 lengths last year when he was still going clear at the line. A dynamite performance. And then the image of him just running lamentably, the worst race of his career at Haydock, and that's his only run since. So it's sometimes the answer, as I've said before, is I don't know, and I don't know what to expect from him. What I do know is that Haydock was the worst performance of his career when he was very strongly fancied, that he missed the Savile Chase at Leopardstown over Christmas with an angry joint, that he wasn't even entered for the Irish Gold Cup. So, you know, something was still plainly troublesome at that point. And anyone who says, well, he's a 15-length Gold Cup winner and he's run once since and I can back him at 8-1, I have to back him. I get that and I get it completely. But there's a pretty long history of, you know, horses who go bad in their prep race for a Gold Cup. It's a tough bounce back and I'm just not sure what to expect.
Sometimes you look at a horse and its price and think, well, there's not much margin for error, that, you know, like a Galloping Deschamps. You can look at him and think, well, yeah, you know what he is. He's a 13-8. He's a 6-4 chance at his best, whatever. Whereas an Aploutard, you look at him and think, well, he could be a 7-4 chance. Yeah. He could be a 14s chance.
It's a bit like Shishkin in the Ascot Chase the other week. You know, not after two or three fences, but maybe after a mile or so. In the run, you'd be thinking, hello, look at this fella pinging away and looking back on form. In which case, he won't be an 8-1 chance any longer. But at the moment, I just put a query against him and say good luck.
Good luck to Paul Townend too in the JCB Triumph Hurdle, David. He's got to choose between the Mullins trio. The one I don't think he'll ride is Gala Marceau because he hasn't ridden it yet. And I think she looks quite a difficult ride. I think Danny Mullins is beginning to get a relationship going with her. Lossy Mouth, Blood Destiny is the choice he's got to make. Where would you go?
Well, I'm hoping it's going to be the Danny Mullins special. And I like this Gala Marceau in this race. And it's sort of a theme that I did want to touch on about taking results from the DRF. And because it was something that wasn't necessarily expected beforehand, just refusing to believe it. And it's a little bit the same with the other 2-mile novice hurdle and Fassal Vega. You know, obviously... disappointed, but I just don't think that Il Etetomp got the full credit that it deserved for that. You know, in terms of, okay, yes, Fasal Vega beat that horse comfortably at Christmas, but the race at the Dublin Racing Festival, it was run something like 11 seconds faster. Now, you look at Il Etetomp and the way that horse races, if you've got a two-mile race that's taking 11 seconds less, there's got to be a good chance that horse is improved, you know, because that's the style. I think we've got something similar with Gala Marceau in that, okay, we know Lossie's Mouth wasn't seen to best effect, got messed about a bit, but she wasn't making up any ground at all in the closing stages. And I just think there's a fair chance that Gala Marceau hasn't got the credit that she deserved for winning that. And looking at the prices, I'm more than happy to put those two horses in an each way double.
I'm against that view because I still have that vivid image of Lossie Mouth and Gala Marceau in that spring juvenile hurdle at Christmas. And to my eye, that day, they both had a clear shot at the race. And Lossie Mouth was just appreciably better.
I would just point out there that that was her first run, wasn't it, for Mullins?
True.
And she hadn't run for 8 months, and it just might be that she needed that a little bit more than Lossie Mouth.
True, and you're getting the price, and I'm not. But I do think Lossie Mouth had an enormous amount against her last time, the triple whammy of quite badly hampered and shuffled back, and then, you know, having to race wide to challenge and a soft pace as well. The leader, Gala Marceau, into the straight was strong when Lossie Mouth tried to challenge. So I think that match is a fascinating one, but this Blood Destiny is going to set a brilliant sight, I think, because he looks big, strong, aggressive, bold jumper, and doesn't hang around. You know, he looks like he stays the trip very, very well, which is always important in Triumph. It's loose line, but he's beaten horses like Nusret and was it Comfort Zone? He's beaten those horses by a longer distance than Lossie Mouth did when she's come up against them. It's tenuous, but putting big spaces in fields is what he does at the moment. And that market's going to be shaped, David, by which way Paul Townend jumps to a large extent, I think. And I'd say of all the head scratches he's got next week, that's the itchiest.
Yeah, because you've obviously as well got the intriguing angle with the criticism that he had for the Lossie Mouth round.
True.
As well, haven't you? So does he feel as though he's got something to put right there, or does he think, you know what, I'll just go and win it on Blood Destiny instead anyway?
Now, we're nearly done. Would you believe we've nearly finished talking about our Cheltenham previews? Is there anything else on the Friday you want to discuss before?
Right.
I mean, it's difficult, I know, because you've got all the likes of the Fox Hunters, the Martin Pipes, the Albert Bartletts.
Things you thought you'd never say. That Mers Chase looks a really exciting race, doesn't it? Allegory de Vassy versus Impervious versus Jeremy's Flame. I don't have a strong view in terms of which horse will win, but they look a really high-class collection of mares. Allegory de Vassy was a bit wild going right-handed last time, but she looks like she has a real leap in her, and Impervious has been bought by JP McManus, and she seems to be thriving too. They've both got ratings well into the 150s already on Time Form, David, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly. It looks, you know, we say about these races that, okay, in an ideal world, maybe they wouldn't exist, but they are attracting the horses, and they're, you know, really producing intriguing races. So, you know, let's hope that they all get there at this stage and they take each other on, because it does look like it's going to be a much deeper race than what it was last year.
How about that Colonel Mustard in the Triumph Hurdle? Ran really well at Kelso at the weekend, only slightly higher than when placed last year. That's a horse who could run well at a price.
Final question. We're just about to finish our recording. We were talking about the Presby Cup. The Cheltenham is used as a gauge of the health of British racing, for good or bad. What would be a good number for British winners this week, GC?
Ooh, that's a good question. It was 23.5 a couple of years ago, was it?
Yeah.
What was it last year?
Was it 18? Was it 17? 11, something like that? It was around that number. It was better than expected.
Yeah.
Higher or lower?
I think I'm going to say, and, you know, it's a fairly meagre achievement in the grand scheme of things, I think we might get double digits.
Oh, there we go. David?
I was going to say double digits should be seen as a success, yeah.
Fewer than 12.
Well, thanks to GC. Thanks to David. Thanks to Ed and Billy for their efforts earlier on. So much to look forward to next week. Can't wait to cover all the action across sportinglife.com.
Are you Cheltenham ready? Download the Sporting Life app for the best coverage of the festival, including live race blogs, stable tours, interviews, video previews, and expert tipping.